Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian Lang, and today I have Amber Armstrong from IBM Watson Commerce and Influencers team. So excited to have you, Amber. Why don't you introduce yourself and say hi to the audience.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. This is really exciting. Exciting to be working with you here at NRF. We've had an exciting few days and a couple more days coming with a few more kind of exciting things we have going on. So my name is Amber Armstrong. I lead digital and social for the newly announced Watson Customer Engagement.
Customer Engagement, that's right.
Thank you. So Watson Customer Engagement, it's kind of cool. It's the combination of Watson Marketing, Watson Commerce, and Watson Supply Chain. And we really think it's our differentiator in the market is we're actually applying cognitive across all three.
Right,
Competitors doing that.
No.
Super exciting.
I think Salesforce is kind of claiming to do that. I don't mind saying that on the show because honestly, I have no idea what Einstein does. So as far as I know, you're the only ones that are applying
across all three. We think we're the only one across all three.
Yeah, no doubt.
There are people that are applying across two.
Yes.
No one we believe is applying across all three.
All three, yeah. No, that's great. So how did you end up in this role? Like, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I've been with IBM about 10 years. And I've been through a variety of roles. I've worked with business partners. I worked in messaging. And about 3 years ago, I kind of fell into the digital space and really started in on the social business side, moved into commerce, which is now Watson Customer Engagement.
Yes.
And I lead all of our web presence. Everything that you see externally for customer engagement is mine, if you will. All of our social channels, and really figuring out how do you take this very complex story and dial it into something that can be consumed really easily on social and digital?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think, we'll dig into this a little bit later, but I really want to focus on what Watson is and what Watson isn't and what you can do now, and we'll get into some examples of that, and also what you see as going to be possible going into the future.
Yeah.
And so, So to start, I think going into NRF in here at the big show in New York. New York ambiance. It's really loud sirens in here right now. going into the show, you guys released a really groundbreaking study on Generation Z. And one interesting thing that I noticed is that Gen Z is actually still about in store, which is really cool. Like, they pretty much said that they're not all about pure play e-commerce. They want to be able to go experience brands in a physical environment. However, I think they have said they want a completely different experience than the last 20, arguably 80 years of what we've seen in-store shopping experiences.
Yeah.
So, maybe you could unpack that study a little bit more and talk about Gen Z a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think the thing that's really interesting with Gen Z is personalization to them is completely, totally normal.
Yeah.
Right? So they said it says 44% of them don't watch television. They don't have a concept of this one-for-many marketing approach, right?
Yeah.
They're used to Facebook and Snapchat. And one of the things I like to talk about is your Facebook feed is it's as unique as your fingerprint.
Yeah.
Right? There are very few things out there that are truly unique to individuals. But Facebook and any kind of social channel is a perfect example of that, right? Because you and I could take the same actions. We could friend the same people. Those people may not friend us back, right?
But right.
We could attempt to, right? But then what you click on in your newsfeed, what I click on, is going to be totally different.
Right.
So they're used to having things that are built immediately for them.
Yeah.
There's no generalization for Gen Z.
It's just, it's an insane concept because having, grown up in the 90s, like, that's just, we didn't have that at all, right?
Yeah.
Our experience was completely pushed on us, 100%. I've talked about this a few times, but, like, my experience, for instance, like, playing video games growing up, it was all like one very specific experience that my friends and I all shared. But now when my little nephew goes to play video games, he's playing Minecraft, which he can mod to no ends and, you know, and do pretty much anything that he wants. And I think that doesn't get to personalization, but the point is experiences are very unlimited now. And so for brands, in order for them to actually provide value to Gen Z, if they aren't personalizing, they're going to lose.
Well, when they go into the store, they expect to see exactly the thing that they looked at online. Because the other thing is, so they say, yes, we like to go in store and purchase things. That's great.
Yeah.
But you know what? They also have done all of the social before they get there.
Right. Right.
They've read the reviews. They've talked to the friends.
Oh, yeah.
Games. You know, they've done all of that research to get them there. So you've got to make sure that that experience is personalized, but also that it's linked to them across all of your experiences.
Right. Like, they need to be able to, like, it's almost like attribution, kind of.
Yeah,
no, that's huge. So what are some, like, really, you know, high-level ways that you, or practical high-level ways that you feel like brands could do that? Or maybe you have some examples of ways that Watson's has been applied to help brands be able to do this for Gen Z.
Yeah, well, there's two, actually, that we just announced the last couple of days with Watson Customer Engagement with Hermes. And also HSN.
Yeah.
And so you think with Hermes, what they're doing is pricing optimization.
Right.
So they're looking at, okay, we have all of these stores, and they're the largest retailer in Cyprus. They're, you know, they have all of these stores. How do they optimize the prices in those stores, right? So it's the what and the when and the why.
Yeah.
So they're powering all of this cognitive analytics and data behind it to make those decisions, and then tying it in with the supply chain to know, you know, how much inventory do we have of this thing?
Yeah.
Is that inventory in the right location? Can we get it there?
Yeah.
Being able to make all of those decisions happen kind of automatically.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So for a customer who is interacting with Hermes and, you know, they're walking into the store and they're seeing this pricing. What does that experience feel like? Like, is it something where it's like, you know, you see prices dropping and falling on the fly, or is it something where it's like, you know, it's not actually apparent to them that anything different is actually happening?
It shouldn't be apparent to them.
In one of the keynotes, I think it was Levi's was saying, one of the most common causes for abandonment of a purchase is being out of stock. And it kills merchants all the time. So being able to have that level of data and be able to make sure that, you know, things are priced appropriately so that you're guaranteed to be able to sell at any given time, that's huge.
Well, and also tying it across the three.
Yeah.
Because think about this, you know, and this happens all the time, as much as we would love to say it doesn't, right? But marketing's like, oh, this ad is performing really well.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy more space on Facebook for this ad. You know, we're going to sell this watch.
Yeah.
Right? And that's great. And suddenly, wow, look at all this traffic we're getting in from this ad. And suddenly, you know, everything's personalizing on the website.
Yeah.
And then the guy, you know, over in China, who's shipping the goods, is like, what is going on?
And then there's nothing to even sell anymore. So,
but
if you, in reality, if you had left the price at a proper spot and you had, and advertised at a proper rate, then you would actually be able to meet your demand where it's at.
Well, and even being able to take the feedback from that, so to have the marketer say, hey, we're seeing a lot of really great traction on this watch in this particular color.
Yeah.
Right. Feed that back in through the supply chain so that the guy, you know, who's actually manufacturing the watches starts making more blue watches.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's going to increase your profits. It's going to increase sales.
Absolutely.
It's going to make the whole thing flow together. But the challenge is these companies don't have the ability for this data to flow between these groups. These groups tend to be very
Silo, definitely. Oh yeah, no doubt. I have seen that before, and it does cause problems. I think I can safely say that almost every merchant out there has felt this pain.
Yes, absolutely. Well, HSN is the other customer that's mentioned in the release, and they're using Watson Marketing, so they're kind of on that front end I was talking about, right? So how do you make sure there's the same experience, right? Whether someone's watching Home Shopping Network on television, or they're online, or they're on the mobile, you know, whatever it is, making sure that they're seeing the same experience, that they're able to participate appropriately.
Yeah, definitely. For all of you out there that you know, have really invested your lives into responsive design, this is kind of like making your brand responsive across all channels. So it's really amazing.
I think that's a great way to put it. It really is. Making sure that the exact same experience shows up no matter where someone is.
Yeah, that's something that I think that a lot of merchants, again, wish that they could do and would have the confidence that that's actually happening. Because I think right now they don't even necessarily know half the time. So, yeah, that's great. Cool. Well, I mean, I think one of the things that, and I talked about this earlier, the power of Watson, it almost seems limitless. I mean, it's AI, right? It's such a broad idea in itself. And so one of the things that we've talked about on the show before, and we had a Watson SME from your partner network come on the show before, and he talked about some of the things that Watson is able to do. But it would be really great to kind of hear that reiterated again. You know, how would a retailer best go about, or a merchant go about actually applying Watson to their business? How can they actually engage with IBM to say, okay, yeah, this is what I need from Watson, and this is what Watson can do for me. What does that experience look like?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, it really is limitless at this point, right?
Right.
Think about where we are in the chain. This is one of the things we were talking about yesterday, I believe it was, of there's so many things. We're at such a turning point in the world of commerce and
marketing and supply
chain. We don't even know what's possible yet. We haven't even dreamed it yet, right?
Yeah.
There are things that you can do today, and there's some great customers who are, you know, starting out. I think one of the things that we talk a lot about at IBM and the way that we live at IBM is this agile methodology.
Yes, right? I love agile. I just wrote an article about agile recently,
great. Well, it's about taking little steps, right, and tweaking as you go.
Iterating. Right?
If you think of using, you know, Watson as this, I'm going to go do this giant thing. It's going to be 4 years out.
Yeah.
Your competitors are going to beat you to it, right? Because they're going to start doing little things and they're going to learn as they go and they're going to get there so much more quickly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different ways to do it from the marketing side and the commerce side. There's Watson Content Hub. And I think people are really surprised to hear that we offer Watson Content Hub at 30-day free trial, $250 a month.
Which is mind-blowing. Actually, I didn't even really know about the Content Hub. When did you release this?
Maybe a month ago.
Maybe, yeah, that's what I thought. So
maybe 2 months.
This is it. Yeah, I think someone was saying November, potentially.
November.
Yeah, so this, and you don't have to say this now if you don't want to, but this is direct competition for, like, Adobe Experience Manager, right?
Absolutely.
So, $250 a month is crazy for something like this.
Yeah.
And I know this because I've lived in this world. It's an unbelievable price to be able to engage with AI applied to marketing. That's mind-blowing. So what you're saying is, and to kind of sum up what you're saying is, find something that Watson does, because it does a lot of things,
right,
that you know that you can leverage out of the gate and start there. And then as you start to experience the benefit of that, then maybe start to build up or build up some sort of MVP, right? So it's like, okay, I can see value in these things immediately. I know it.
Right.
It's guaranteed. And then build on top of that. That's great. Instead of saying, oh, I want to go do something crazy with AI, and hey, IBM, you know, what can you do for me? Engage at a smaller level first and get live.
one of the things I love about Facebook and what Mark Zuckerberg does there is he does these, like, you know, and lots of companies do, right, but these kind of hackathons, right, where he kind of challenges people.
Yes.
You kind of all get locked in a hotel for the weekend and that sort of thing, right? I mean, why not do that? Take and lock a bunch of your developers in a hotel for a weekend and turn them loose on the Watson APIs, right? They're free, right?
Right.
They're going to use the Watson APIs. There's conversations. There's the retrieve and reward and personality insight.
Yeah.
We've done some cool things with it. We did something called the Cognitive T-Shirt Company that we took to a bunch of different events.
Oh, I love that.
And we used people's social profiles. And this is just us kind of playing around with it, right? This wasn't like some massive development, right? But we played around with it. We used Tone Analyzer and all these different Watson APIs to take people's social profiles, plug them in, ask them some other additional questions on top of that, and then customize a T-shirt for them, right?
Yeah.
It's a very simple use of the technology, but it goes to show you, if you're a retailer, if you use some of these APIs, combining your customers' social profiles, maybe ask them some questions, right, that also gets their buy-in, their participation, and then customize something for them in the store, right? Like, that's a very simple example,
right,
that makes it real for your customers and also can help your team learn about cognitive in the process.
I love it, yeah. One of the other things I wanted to ask you, and I meant to ask you kind of as a follow-up to my last question, is Watson can be applied sort of within the context of IBM-only solutions, obviously, right? But can you apply Watson to other solutions as well? You know, you said you mentioned the API, but so let's say I had a Magento store and I wanted to apply Watson to pricing strategies. That would be a perfectly legitimate use case.
So there's a couple of different ways we think of Watson. So when you think of something that we, like Watson Content Hub, right?
Mm-hmm.
Watson and Cognitive is infused in that solution.
Yeah.
So when you buy that solution, you're getting Watson. Then there's also this platform as a service idea, right? So this Watson APIs that you can access, right?
Yes.
The conversations, the personality insights, all those things, we were Tone Analyzer, the things we were just talking about. Those are as a platform. You can do whatever you want to with those, right?
Got it.
Our business partners do that as well, right? But we also are making sure, in order to get the Watson customer engagement, be able to use the Watson brand with that, we had to have Watson infused in our solution.
Right.
So it's both.
It's both, right. You know, makes sense. That's kind of what I was driving at. That's amazing. So in short, you know, I think this is something that anyone can access and take advantage of. That's really what you're driving at, in at least in some, you know, in some way, even if it's a small step.
It's play.
Yeah.
You have to play a little bit, right?
Play a little bit with it.
Innovation and, you know, have people dream big and start small, right?
So Watson is for the entrepreneurs. It's for the innovators.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is, I mean, it is certainly applicable at big companies, but it's also very applicable at, you know, for any company, right? Being able to, and that's where, especially with the communities, you're sitting here at NRF, these retailers, you know, especially some of the really big retailers, right? Their concern shouldn't be their peers. Their concern should be the companies that are significantly smaller than they are, that are so much more nimble, that are trying things out and using new technologies and maybe not beholden to all of this, you know, kind of on-premise existing legacy type platforms, right? They've got to think like a challenger brand.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, we actually heard Richard Branson talk about that this morning. Yeah, in the keynote, he was talking about how to be competitive. And I think, you know, he's pretty much was getting at this very idea, which is, you know, the small guy is the guy you got to watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
If they're innovative and they're cheeky, as he put it, and they've got, you know, spunk, they are going to come up and get you when you aren't looking.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So you have to be the same way back. And that's one thing I think enterprise-level businesses sometimes miss is in order to compete, you also have to be innovative.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be out there and you have to, you know, be providing solutions that your customers aren't expecting. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's about predicting their needs, right? How do you get ahead of where they're headed?
Yeah, right? Totally. Speaking of getting out ahead of things, you know, I think based on the volume of voice-driven tech that we saw released at CES, and there was some of that here at NRF, it really looks like 2017 is going to be kind of the first, like, really dominant year of voice interaction. And I say that, I mean, last year it was strong, no doubt. But Amazon sold, 26 million Alexa-enabled devices in November, which is crazy that, you know, 26 million homes are now going, well, I guess it wouldn't necessarily be homes, but 26 million devices are out there that can be talked to, and just from the month of November.
Yeah.
and at CES, we saw Alexa in you know, refrigerators and robots and, Watson's in a robot. We saw Watson in Pepper here at NRF. And so, you know, looking forward, and looking out ahead of the curve, you know, what do you have to say about voice? I mean, how do you feel like consumers are going to leverage voice for purchases specifically?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting because if you think about, you know, you take the Amazon work and then you take the work that Mark Zuckerberg did over last year for his work where he was automating his home, right?
Right, his personal assistant,
yeah.
Right? Morgan Freeman,
yes,
is narrating it.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was really great. And, you know, he found he actually used text more than voice in that scenario.
Yeah.
But so I think it's you have to have both.
Both,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And the difference is when someone writes something, they write in one way. When someone speaks something, they use natural language.
Right.
Which causes this totally different interaction.
Absolutely.
And the system has to be able to understand both.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, we got a couple of really good examples of customers that are doing this today.
Oh, right? Great. Yeah.
Yeah. So 1-800-Flowers.
Yeah, actually, we've talked about this on the show a little bit before.
Oh, okay.
Gwen is so cool, but not in detail. So, yeah, dig into it.
Yeah, Gwen's great, right? So Gwen is Gifts When You Need. So that's what it stands for. So I think that's kind of cool. And you go in and you interact and you go and ask you questions. So it's using the Watson question answer API, right? And so you ask Gwen questions about or whatever you're trying to do. Gwen will ask you questions. You kind of have this back and forth.
Right.
It ends up
conversational commerce, right?
Conversational. And so then it recommends solutions to you for whatever gift you're trying to get.
Yeah.
So then you think about it's also learning as it goes. So the next time you come in, it's going to know more about you.
Yeah.
Right? But it's also going to know, well, hey, I've seen this interaction happen across 10 customers.
Right.
So it's learning from that. It's getting smarter and smarter as it goes.
That's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, wasn't it, I think the study that came out on this, did it say something like 80% of customers said that they love the interaction and that they will definitely use it again?
Yeah. And I think the trick to that also is knowing when to switch, right?
Right.
And so we talk about with Watson, it's the combination of man and machine.
Right.
It's not just machine. Right?
Yeah.
It's the combination.
Yeah. So does Gwen switch at some point?
Yes.
Fantastic.
If it needs to, at some point, right, it recognizes that, oh, hey, I'm in a little over my head here. I need a human to help here.
Yeah, we've talked to some other vendors that are using the exact same approach to conversational commerce because the truth is, you know, at some point, you know, you really do need that level of human touch to finalize things. Although, you know, I think that you know, the Watson team's probably working to get even better to the point where maybe humans don't have to touch things in the future.
Well, certainly that's the plan, right? Is that, you know, it's this progressive, you know, the human has to get involved later and later and later, right? So
right.
That you're investing your human resources in the things that are going to make those experiences even better.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
So you're not spending the time answering the basic questions with the human.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, what about in-store? I think, you know, as we get further down the road with voice, I can't help but hypothesize that We're going to start interacting via voice, even in store with AI. Do you have any good examples of this happening?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So it's starting, right?
Yeah.
It's really starting to get out there. We did a great work, you know, South by Southwest is coming up in a few months. We did a big experiment at South by Southwest last year where we had lots of robots in our environment, and they were all interacting. People were interacting with them, all using voice. And
so cool.
You know, we even had one, which I don't even understand how this happened, but you could put this thing on your head and tell the little Star Trek robot, or Star Wars, I get them so confused. I'm sorry. But it would move it around, right? So there's all kinds of things that that you can do to when you're in a physical space.
Yeah.
One of the things we've seen customers starting to play around with is bank tellers, right? So you walk up, you have a conversation, here's what I need to do. And the robot, Pepper, can talk to you, right? SoftBank is the customer that's working with this. There's also a company called Rabobank, and their whole idea...
Wait, was that Rabobank?
Similar. It's Raba.
Rabobank, okay, good to know.
but it's great, because their whole idea is around how do you create automated banks that really have these, like, robotics.
Is that released?
It's out there. You can go to their website and read all about what they're doing. I mean, they're still learning.
Oh my goodness, that's so cool.
Right?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go check that out.
Right? It's so cool to think about. It's Rabobank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Good to know.
So there's lots of things. People are experimenting, right? And I think that's what we have to do. And I also think that that really helps retailers and get their customers to embrace some of the novelty of it.
Yeah.
Right? So... it goes a little bit from there's this kind of creepy thing to, I mean, Pepper is really cute, and Pepper
I took engaging. I took a picture with Pepper today and I sent it to my family, and my boys thought it was the best thing ever.
Yes. Back to Gen Z, right?
Right. Like, yeah.
How do you engage with Gen Z?
Yeah.
They're gonna love to talk to robots, I bet.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. My kids would love it if we had a robot they could talk to. They would boss around. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, it's really exciting. So what do you see kind of as like, if you could look out into the future a little bit, what do you kind of see some implementations looking like? Like, if you, you know, start to get a creative a little bit and applied AI to the in-store aisle, what would that look like to you? Or if you've got, I don't have to answer that.
I'm not sure about the in-store aisle, but I know on digital, I can tell you how I'm planning to use it.
Yeah, right? That's great.
So, you know, as I was saying earlier, I think, you know, our digital experience is one of the sites that I like is Think Marketing. Mm-hmm. Right. And what I'm going to be able to do with Think Marketing. Think Marketing is a news site specifically for marketers. It's, I guess, also interesting to commerce leaders that are trying to talk about customer experience, that sort of thing. And when you go into Think Marketing right now, you read an article, and on the right hand side, it's Watson Recommends. And it pulls up articles, it pulls up products, it pulls up customer studies, all these things.
Nice.
Based on, we're not programming it, it's based on the content in the article, right? And understanding that in kind of natural language. And then where we're taking that is being able to take third-party data. So think of LinkedIn, Facebook, what we call Universal Behavior Exchange, you know, any demand base, any kind of third-party data you can think of, being able to consume that so that when you come into Think Marketing is customized based on your past search history, meaning search history on our site,
right,
plus this third-party data so that it's more and more relevant for you. But then I think also giving you opportunities to personalize it even more through choice.
Nice.
And so to make that experience something that's really unique for every single person that visits our site, we're working on Think Marketing right now. We'll have some great things coming up before Amplify here at the end of March. But then doing that across all of our sites, right? And thinking about how retailers can do that as well, right?
Yeah.
Third-party data is only getting better and better and better.
Right, it really is.
It's a little scary.
It is a little scary. Yeah, I definitely agree.
But if you can use that to make the customer experience better and do it in a way that's not intrusive.
Yeah.
and give customers an opportunity, as I said earlier, to participate in that personalization.
Yes.
That makes...
So true.
That if I give you permission, I'm much less offended when you keep following me around with the boots.
Absolutely. And the truth is, like, and I've talked about this with Brian Eisenberg as well. Basically, you know, once utility overwhelms concern, we as humans just jump on it because we're all about things that are actually useful, things that are going to benefit us. And so if we have a brand that we trust, that we're giving permission to, then we will be willing to do that. Right. And Amazon's a good example of that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, I think we're well over time at this point. Thank you so much for being on the show, Amber. It was really great talking with you. And I'm excited about what's ahead with Watson, for sure.
Great. Thank you so much for having me here. And thanks for talking with us at NRF.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right.